I'm a big fan of proof of concept. Look in your company for that department that has a leader who may naturally be inclined to improvement or to quality or to Six Sigma, whichever method you prescribe to. Look for that person in your organization who might be a thought leader, a progressive thinker, and work with that person to partner on an improvement. Find something that's tangible, that's measurable, not necessarily in dollars, but measure some sort of improvement and then communicate the heck out of it.
Hi, this is Zen in the Art of Manufacturing. I'm Brian, your host, and today I have Allison Greco with us, who has a really long history in, well, I don't know that long, 15 years, in continuous improvement across a lot of different industries. And none of them actually are manufacturing, which is kind of cool. So I love, you know, to talk to people in different industries and how lean and continuous improvement is applied. So thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, you're welcome.
A lot of people, most people, I think the knee-jerk reaction is to focus on cost, like with everything, right? Whether it's continuous improvement or something, you either want to increase revenue or you want to decrease cost. So how do you go about justifying, let's say I want to do this. Let's say I'm going to relate it back to manufacturing because it's the world I live in, but I'm a plant manager. I want to bring somebody like you in, whether on a consulting basis or I want to hire somebody to help me do these things, help me transform my culture, right? And I have to justify it up. So how do we do that?
Yeah, so I would typically start by looking at what are the company's objectives. So the company typically has some objectives of being a great place to work and reducing employee turnover. So that might be an area where I can talk to them about, let's work on your processes and make them easier for your employees. Let's get your employees involved in making improvements so that we can reduce your turnover. We can increase your engagement. They will typically have something that is maybe an earnings per share or watching their stock improve or their return on investment of something improve. And so we can set some goals for that, but we're going to set the goals in terms of maybe increasing output or reducing defects instead of setting the goal as the dollar. But we can equate the reduction in defects to a dollar amount in the end. But we don't want the goal to be the dollar. We want the goal to be the defect reduction, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that it makes sense. It's like, I don't know if you listened to the one we had with Jesse a couple weeks ago, but he mentioned the Alcoa example with Paul O'Neill. So the company was in terrible shape. It was in the red, and then they focused on safety, and then everything got better a couple of years later because of the focus on safety and the things that it leads to, right? So it's picking the right metric and going from there. So I've been asking this question to pretty much everybody now. Every time and most of the people that we've been able to interview on the podcast now have been, you know, either folks in continuous improvement in industry for a long time, like they've been, you know, with different companies, or they've been consultants, or they, you know, flip flop back and forth between them. Why is everybody not doing this? It just makes too much sense to me. Do you have any idea?
I would love to know the answer to that question. There's a variety of reasons why everyone isn't doing it. What I will say is the companies where I've seen tremendous success is when there's a leader who is willing to advocate for continuous improvement. It's typically a leader who has previous experience where they've seen it done well, or someone who just has that mindset. And so then when you have that leader who as we say, gets it, then they can go and be the ambassador to the other senior level C-suite leaders. And it's back to influence without authority. So instead, if you don't have a leader who's being the advocate, then you're looking at an individual contributor or a manager level who's trying to push something up. And I think just as human beings, we have this nature of we get so busy that we don't often take time to plan. Instead, we feel pressured to get through our to-do list. So then it's just in our nature, we just want to get through our to-do list and we don't often take the time to plan, and that's what continuous improvement takes. is you have to, instead of spending 80% of your time doing and 25% planning, it's kind of flip-flopped. Ultimately, you save more time. You actually spend less time working when you're using this kind of approach to work. But it's tough to change our comfort zone and the way that we've always done it. You know, it's like our favorite phrase in continuous improvement. We want to get over the way we've always done it. And it's tough. I mean, my husband calls me out all the time on things that I don't want to change. And I'm glad that he does, because we, even continuous improvers, get stuck in that mindset of just being too busy to improve, too busy to sit down and really be strategic with our time.
I agree. It's really hard. And changing habits, and that's really what you're doing, changing habits and behaviors on a daily basis is really hard. And people generally want to do what's easy, not what's hard. I do, or stuff I like, not stuff I don't like. But it just becomes, there's so many examples out there of companies that have this culture ingrained in them, call it whatever you want, but they kill their competitors, right? Like, it gives them so many different competitive advantages above everybody else, because they can iterate on things faster. They can change things faster. They're 10 steps ahead of people who aren't doing this. It just seems like Harvard Business School and Stanford and everybody should be screaming this from the rooftops, and it should just be like the standard at this point, right?
Of course I agree. This is how I live. I totally agree. But we are talking about an example of my morning frustration of getting my kids to school, out the door to school on time with all the things they're supposed to have. My husband and I have been struggling with this for 8 months now? And finally something happened last night where I decided I'm going to go fix it. I'm going to create a checklist for my children to do every single day before we leave the house, so we can prevent any defects from happening, so we can get to school on time. And even as a continuous improver, this simple process took me 8 months to decide to fix. And it probably took us 20 minutes to fix it. It's insane. But you just have to have something to trigger you to say enough is enough. I'm ready to do something different.
Yeah. And these things exist in other places too. Like my, not to go down the kid rabbit hole too much, but my kids go to a Montessori school, and Montessori is very much about experiential learning and things like that. And the classroom is very well organized. Everything has a spot. It always goes back into its spot. There's specific processes that the kids follow, standard work. So you got a little bit of 5S on where stuff goes. You have standard work that everybody's doing every single day. You can measure improvement. You can change things. Like, it's pretty cool. And I just I don't understand why everybody doesn't. I know why everybody doesn't do it, because we don't do it inside of our company. We try, but it's hard. I feel like, 20 years from now, it's going to be the standard everywhere, right? Doesn't matter what kind of business it is.
I would love for that to happen.
I know. I mean, you started at Continuous Improvement International to kind of promote that. You know what I mean? So, of course, you believe it. So tell me, speaking of that, so what is different about Continuous Improvement International versus like all the other organizations that are out there that are lean continuous improvement related?
Yeah, I think Continuous Improvement International is different because we are really a member-driven organization, and we focus a lot more on soft skills than on hard skills. A lot of the offerings that we have are things that revolve more around networking and developing together in a small group setting. We have a group that we call Meeting of the Minds, and it's a 4-week session that we hold throughout the year. It's 4 weeks. You meet 1 hour a week over a specific topic. This month, we're working on influence without authority. In a previous session, we worked on creating engagement in a world of distraction. So we bring together a small group with a facilitator with some set topics, but a lot of open discussion. And so we learn together, we share topics. We want to bring people together because there's a lot of best practices that need to be shared. And there's a lot of sometimes commiseration that needs to be happened. We just need a place to go complain and then a place to celebrate too. We do. We sometimes we just need someone who understands. So it's a whole lot more community focused than most other organizations I've encountered. We do have an online library of tools, templates, courses to work on those hard skills, but then we bring people together via a video conference so that they can work on soft skills.
Well, I mean, if you think about everything we talked about today, we didn't talk about a single tool other than me. I brought them up. You didn't bring any of them up, right? Almost everything we talked about today was soft skills and the cultural, social, psychological side of this whole thing, which is probably more important to a certain extent than the tools. Because if you can't get somebody to do it, who cares, right?
Yeah, we create a lot of tools to give you a structure to have these conversations. So I have a tool for the three whys, but the tool's not important. The tool just gives you a way to structure a conversation, to document the results, but it's how to use the tool. And I felt like no other organization was really teaching you that. I wanted to grow those skills myself, and I didn't know where to go. So that's a lot of the motivation behind the things that we offer in the membership is gosh, what are all the things that we wish we could get better at and we just don't know where to go?
Yeah, it makes sense. Especially, and you're not industry focused, right?
We're not. We're open to all industries, and we have a variety of industries in our membership already. And we're quickly finding that everyone has the same kind of challenges, no matter where you are, location, no matter what company you work for, we all experience a lot of the same challenges.
Yeah. I think the challenges are the same no matter what company it's in. Like, you know, we're at SensorTrax kind of on our own kind of lean and continuous improvement journey. You know, we read a lot of books about lean and manufacturing and how it came about and the tools. And, you know, we do the podcast and use this internally as well. And it applies. Like, I never really understood, like, the epiphany I had lately was standard work, right? Like, if you have a standard process you follow to do certain things, and you can tweak it to measure improvements. And I've heard about this for a decade, right? And never did it, never put the dots together. But it's really interesting how widely applicable this stuff is and how powerful it can be.
It is. It really is. I was just telling someone about a process that we were doing on employee onboarding. Just the process of how do you get someone embedded into your company, from getting them access to software that they need, to getting them training that they need, to getting them embedded into just company culture and the way of doing business. And that's a whole process improvement in itself. And it's human resources.
Yeah. And depending, you know, what's interesting about that is depending on the size of the company, you may not do it very often, or you got a large one and they're doing it every day and it's, you know, 15, 20 people a day or more, or Amazon, 100,000 people a day.
Right. Yeah.
I'm exaggerating, but.
It's maybe not 100,000, but it's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. What do you, and I kind of asked you this a little bit earlier too, but a lot of times this podcast focuses on how do I get started? Like, if I want to start implementing a culture like this, chip away at little things, get some small wins, how do I do that? And one of the other things that I've been asking everybody lately is, if a company was going to develop a single habit, like you, one thing that you would suggest they do and change, what would that be?
Okay. So where to get started? I'm a big fan of proof of concept.
Okay.
Look in your company for that department that has a leader who may naturally be inclined to improvement or to quality or to Six Sigma, whichever method you prescribe to. Look for that person in your organization who might be a thought leader, a progressive thinker, and work with that person to partner on an improvement. Find something that's tangible, that's measurable, not necessarily in dollars, but measure some sort of improvement, and then communicate the heck out of it. Tell everyone the story, have that leader tell the story. And then from there, there's typically some positive peer pressure that happens, that they can see that something great is happening at another department, and they want to do it too, because they want their department to be seen as one that is doing well too. No one wants to be left behind. Mm-hmm. So I've done that in the past and it was really successful. So you see one department and another department calls and says, hey, how do I do that? And then another department calls and says, hey, how do I do that too? Come help me. And then eventually you have that one, that one laggard who finally might have to be kind of pulled along, but everyone else has done it by that point. And you have a lot of success stories that are built up.
That's a good one. That's a new one that I haven't gotten yet. That's a really great idea. And how do you transition from that to empowering those people to do their own improvements, you know, kind of without you, or if you're, you know, the boss that's helping, whatever, how do you do that?
Yeah, that's when you shift into the role of the coach. So if you do this one improvement, you try to find something that impacts a lot of people so that you have a team of people together working on it. And then you start to ask them hey, what else frustrates you? Where else do you see things that could probably be improved? And then you walk them through the steps. You show them how to define a problem. You show them how to do a stakeholder analysis, and you put yourself in the position of coach. And then once they get some confidence, typically only takes one project for someone to do another one, because they tend to get really excited when they see that they can make an impact. So they just keep going. So you just have to shift, instead of, you know, more project leader, into more of a coach type of role.
How do you, and maybe this is just me, but, you know, looking at data and problem solving that way, it comes naturally to somebody like me, but how do you deal with being the coach and teaching the soft side of stuff that we've talked about today? So like the winning hearts and minds campaign, that, you know, when trying to influence without authority, and how do you coach on that stuff?
That's a lot harder. So a lot of that is going and watching, say, how they conduct a meeting. So you'll have a person who's leading a project. You just go with them. You don't say anything as their coach during the meeting, but you debrief afterwards. And you shift into how do you think that meeting went? Do you feel like everyone participated? Do you see anyone who is sitting in the corner, or was there anyone who didn't speak up? And you start to have those open-ended questions to try to get them to identify the areas for improvement. And then you can talk about some strategies for improving. And then you go to the next meeting and you do the same thing, and you get into that environment where there's some trust there and they're willing to listen to what you have to say. And then if you know someone who does it really well, you can say, hey, why don't you go watch, you know, Susie Q over here and see what she does. And then you can watch and you can pick up some cues from her on how to get even better.
Do you ever jump in and help somebody that you know is just failing terribly? Or
I do. Yeah, a lot of times we'll do things like Kaizen events or a rapid improvement event in partners. Mm-hmm. And if someone is struggling, I will pop in, but I'll try to do it in a polite fashion.
Yeah.
So that I'm not taking over, but asking again, like, well, have you thought about, hey, what if you did? And you come from this position of where you kind of feign ignorance, so that you're not saying, hey, you're doing it wrong, but you're just asking these questions. Well, hold on. I'm not sure about that. Can you explain that to me one more time? And sometimes you can even say, hey, let me take notes for you, so you can really focus on leading the conversation. So there's kind of some little side strategies that you can use. But yeah, absolutely. If someone's struggling, hop in and help them. Don't let them flail. It's not going to be helpful for anyone in that situation. And then train them after the meeting and then help them again.
Yeah, makes sense. Even I guess it even sounds like you could do maybe a step in, but like you're the coach, you're leading, the person shadowing, then you guys do one together, and then you shadow, and kind of a transition out of the nest, so to speak. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of the companies I worked with, we always did teaching in pairs. Whatever class we taught in pairs. And it was great because we would take turns teaching different sections, and each of us brought a different perspective on that section. And that was a great learning environment for me too, as a continuous improvement manager, is to learn from someone else who might see things a little bit differently. So that's a great way to kind of partner people together.
Yeah. Yeah. I always like the idea of asking those kind of naive questions too, you know, like just, tell me a little bit more about that. Just, you may know, you may not know, it doesn't really matter, but, you know, being able to draw out more information from people to make sure that, you know, you understand, they understand. Sometimes you might look like the idiot, but who cares?
Right. Right. Yeah. It's better to look like the idiot than to take control and not, you know, allow someone the opportunity to grow.
Right. Yeah. Cause in the end, you know, you reach the goal if looking like an idiot sometimes. I'm pretty good at looking like an idiot. It's kind of interesting though. Like in, you know, I know that you go into different businesses all the time, and when you sit down in front of people and, you know, you're very credible, they may assume that you know all about their business, and they're throwing out all these acronyms and stuff. And it's like, yeah, tell me what KPI is again in your business. You know?
Yes. I can tell you I'm working in a transportation company right now. It's an area of transportation I've never worked in before. And so I've had to find that trusted person who I can call after the meeting and say, okay, translate for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I tell like new salespeople for us, like it's okay. If you don't know, ask, just ask. Yes, they may think you're stupid, but it's fine. The industry is so broad. Nobody knows everything. So just ask, tell me again what that means in your business. But yeah. And then, yeah, have somebody who has the secret decoder ring on the side that can tell you what's up. Yeah. So tell me, where do you go to, well, I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Where do you go to learn new things? You know, like in your industry, you're probably going to say Continuous Improvement International is a great place to go.
It is a great place to go. And I'll give you a couple answers. How about that? So okay. I've learned a lot from our members in our continuous improvement cafes and meeting of the minds, because they will talk about their experiences and gives me a different perspective because they're working in different environments than I've worked before. But I do a lot of reading. I do a lot of webinars, and I'll go to webinars that are not continuous improvement specific. And I do a lot of things that are more for entrepreneurs because the perspective is different. And it's really nice to take yourself out of your normal environment and to know that there are other people who do things very, very different from you. And sometimes there's some really great tips that they can give you because you're so focused on your area that you don't necessarily stop and think about, hey, there could be a totally different way to do this that I'm not thinking about.
Yeah. I always think like other people are a great way to learn. Like those meetings of the minds meetings are probably fantastic for that.
They're so cool. They're so cool.
What do you have a favorite book?
Favorite book? Yeah, I do. My favorite book I've probably read 5 times is Into Thin Air by Jon Krakauer. It is nonfiction, and it's a story about an ill-fated trip to the top of Mount Everest. So Jon Krakauer was writing a story for Outside Magazine following a group of people that were making it to the top of Mount Everest, and it's absolutely fascinating. It's on my bucket list to go to Everest Base Camp, but I don't want to go any further than Base Camp.
Is this the one where they make it, or is this one of the tragedy ones?
It's one of the tragedy ones where a lot of people don't make it.
Okay. I've read a couple of Everest stories. I have to check this one out. I'm with you. I would love to go to Base Camp and see that. I think it'd be cool. Mm-hmm. I don't want to call
it. Yeah, it'd be awesome. No. Keep that book convinced me to keep me away from the mountain.
Especially now. It's apparently very busy. Very busy.
Yeah, that's what I understand.
I'll have to check that out. That's cool. So I know that I always like to do, you know, shameless plugs at the end. So like anything that you want to talk about, because we got like 5 minutes left. So I'd love to hear more about Continuous Improvement International. If you want to plug something else, like how do we join? How do we check out more about it? That kind of thing.
Yeah. So we're accepting new members into Continuous Improvement International. It is the Damn Good membership for development, accountability, and mentorship to create an environment where we say that we want you to become your company's most valuable asset. So we want to equip you with the tools and the skills to where you can be an incredible resource for your company who's doing wonderful things to make them more efficient and more effective. So we have an online database of a tremendous amount of tools.
Does something like that exist already or no? It sounds like something different.
It's different. It will be exclusively offered by Continuous Improvement International.
Yeah. Huh. That's really cool. So just to kind of wrap up today, because we're kind of at the end of the hour, soft skills are probably the most important thing that you need to learn if you're going to do types of continuous improvement things, because if you can't get people to change their behavior, it's not going to work, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I feel that I can teach you the tools. You can spend a few days learning the tools, understanding how to go through them on a kind of a step-by-step basis. But where you need more practice and more coaching is on the soft skills, so you can be really powerful in implementing those tools.
Yeah, it's a very good point. All right, well, we are to the end of the hour. So Allison, thank you for joining us on the Zen and the Art of Manufacturing podcast. I certainly learned a lot today. Hopefully you enjoyed our conversation.
You are very welcome. It was a pleasure to be here, and I was excited to be able to share my stories with everyone.
Yeah. So where can people find you, and where can people learn more about Continuous Improvement International?
You can learn more about Continuous Improvement International at continuous-improvement.com or find us on LinkedIn.
All right. Very cool. Thank you very much. So once again, this is Brian and Allison on the Zen and the Art of Manufacturing podcast.